Hi, I'm Colleen McNamara, and you're listening to My Dad on All Marine Radio on the All Warrior Radio Network.
Eight minutes after 8 on a Friday. So in the 8 o'clock hour, we talked to Le Chef. Hang out at the lake for the 4th of July for a bit. Came back to Grand Forks, North Dakota, and he joins us now. So, Kim Holmes, the only All Marine Radio head chef in history, joins us. So, Kim, how are you? Uh-oh, something's wrong. And I don't know what it is. All right, so what we'll do is we'll hang up. That's no bueno. See, when the electricity doesn't work, it sucks. So, because I'm... I have redundant capabilities, yeah, because I know I'll screw it up, and that's the way you have to do it. We'll go ahead and we'll make it work this way. Yeah, I don't know. The electricity stuff didn't work, and so I don't understand what's going on. So, anyway, how was your 4th of July? How was your time at the lake? How was life? Uh-oh. He's not hearing me. Can you hear me now? This are you there?
I am here, yes.
Oh, why? Were you hearing music and stuff too loud?
Yes, it was.
Oh, my bad. Okay. First of all, how was your was that the case?
4th of July.
Yeah, was that the case the first time Was all the music and everything? Was that stuff too loud?
No, I don't know what it was.
Oh, okay.
It's happened a couple times before, but that's okay. You always figure it out because you're the man.
Yeah, right. All right, we got issues. We're working on them. All right. I wasn't going to discuss this because I'm a little bit uncomfortable with the subject matter. But it was a national headline, so I'll ask you about it. Ed Schultz passed away.
Yeah, I saw that.
Yeah, he passed away. I was not his biggest fan. To me, he was an interesting guy. But if I'm going to be honest, to me, he's what's wrong with the American media. He was a conservative talk show host.
Yes, he was.
Right.
Very conservative.
He was Little Rush Limbaugh.
Yes, he was.
And there's a number of them. Kim and I know a few of them. So yeah. In probably 1999 or 2000, I started doing radio. And I started doing it part-time. And I'm sitting, I walk into Kim's restaurant. And the guy I worked for, a guy named Dave Norman, he's sitting there, and he's having dinner. He and his wife are having dinner with Ed Schultz, and I believe his girlfriend at the time, who he ultimately married. And so I walk in, and Dave says, "Hey, Matt, come here." I want you to meet Ed Schultz. And I'd heard him. I'd heard of him. I didn't listen to him or wasn't a fan of his. And so, but he was a big time guy in the Northern Plains. Yes.
Yes, he big time. Yes.
Yeah, big time. So he's in Kim's Joint, which is the best restaurant in the region. And so having dinner, and we get introduced. Hi, how are you? And Dave looks at Ed Schultz and says, Ed, you got any advice for Mac? He's just starting out. And he said something to me that I've never forgotten. He looks at me and he says, hey, Mac, remember this. It's showbiz, baby. And I said, okay. He said, before you do anything else, remember, it's showbiz. Got to put on a show. I said, okay. Now, I fundamentally did not approach talk radio like that. I thought it was...
No.
I thought it was important. I thought the truth was important, okay? So, again, this is just my take on Ed Schultz, professionally. I didn't know him. I didn't know him as a human being, as a guy. I'm sure he was a fine man. At least people say that. But he was approached by two Democratic senators from North Dakota about an opportunity, but he couldn't take advantage of the opportunity given his politics, right? And so the opportunity was going to be have a national radio show devoted to the Democratic side of the aisle.
Yeah.
So how do you do that when you're little Rush Limbaugh?
Yeah.
I'll tell you how. You slip in the bathtub, you hit your head, right? And when you shake your head, you have an epiphany. And you correct the errors of your ways. And that's what he did. And
it's showbiz, baby.
And so if you go back to it's showbiz, right? Oh, so I'm going to be a slave to my political and intellectual beliefs? What, are you crazy? Showbiz, baby. And so I've never forgotten that. So all the bloviating and all the politics, and then he gets fired from MSNBC, and who does he go to work for? Russian television.
Yes.
What? And so, God rest his soul, Ed Schultz passed away, but Kim knew him better than I did. Were you good friends? Would you say you were good friends? I mean, you were...
I was a friend of his because he used to do Sioux broadcasting, a football broadcasting, before he got the radio gig, Democratic radio gig. And he still did his morning radio show, but he used to come into Sanders and eat all the time, and I got to know him through that. And we never talked politics because I just didn't want to. But my greatest memory of Ed Schultz is he was, and that's another thing, he went from broadcasting NDSU football, North Dakota State football, to broadcasting UND football and hating the Bison. But he was in the booth one time.
Hold on. If you can imagine, switching sides in a huge rivalry, right?
Yeah.
If you can imagine that, and then the emotions that inflames when you do something like that, right? And so these are two of the big powers in, at the time, Division II football. National champion Division II, which has grown into Division I, AA. And North Dakota State University and UND are still big powers because they get big kids in the upper Midwest, and then they use those big kids to pound the crap out of everybody. But anyway, there is no professional sports in North Dakota, okay?
No.
Or South Dakota. So the college teams are the biggest thing going. In North Dakota, it is the two football teams and then the men's hockey team at the University of North Dakota, who's the, what, 7-8 time NCAA Division I national champions, tied with Michigan for the most titles or something like that. They go back
and forth. They're one behind Michigan.
One behind Michigan, okay.
They won 8.
So,
yeah.
So, but that's all you got. And in the midst of this, this guy switches sides, okay? So you could imagine how inflamed that was. All right, and so I have to tell one more piece of the story before Kim tells you the story. He also accidentally shot one of his dogs while hunting. Okay. Now, I don't know, when you live in the land where young boys and some young women are born with a shotgun and a rifle in their hands when they come out of the womb, and a fishing rod in there when there's not a shotgun or a rifle in there, you gonna take no small amount of grief if you're dumb enough to. And he was a local guy too. He grew up in the region. If you shoot your own hunting dog, that's ridiculous. It blows their vacuum tube.
How do you do that?
So into this cocktail, and then the other thing I'll tell you is, and Kim, correct me if I'm wrong, North Dakotans, Minnesotans, people that live in that region are not afraid of a cocktail or a beer.
Absolutely not. That's who they go out with at night. If they don't have anybody from the opposite sex.
Yeah, and they're not afraid to go out either, okay? So when you see a party and it's going on in the Upper Plains, okay, don't bring your sipping glass, okay? Because that's not the way they do it.
Bring your mug for your bourbon.
Exactly. Okay, so imagine this. So he's broadcasting with all this having gone on. Go ahead, Kim.
Well, he's in the booth at North Dakota State. It's an outdoor stadium, and somebody gets mad at Ed Schultz and turns around and throws a whiskey bottle at Ed Schultz in the booth, and it hits him. And Ed Schultz jumps out the window onto the stands and goes down and beats the crap out of this guy in the stands. And then he gets back in the booth and starts announcing again. And that's how it is up here in the High Plains Drifters. And so maybe two years after that, he's in Grand Forks broadcasting the soup football games, and everybody says "Machi Casa." That's Italian for "what the fuck." and just, you know, but that's who Ed was, you know. Let's see, the water's too cold here. I'm gonna go swim in a warmer pond.
He was not personally
one-on-one. He was fine. Just, you know, talk hunting and fishing. Never bring up the fact he shot his dog.
Yeah,
I don't know why he shot his dog, whether it was an accident or his dog wasn't performing. But nonetheless, he shot his dog, hunting dog. But, you know, God rest his soul, and his wife, Wendy, and their kids. But he was only 64, so that's showbiz.
I interviewed to replace him when he went to DC. So during the interview process, I looked across the table at he and the owner of the group, and I said, so I didn't do my show the way he did his, right? He got the blowtorch out, and my show is a little bit different in that I've been around the world, I've done some stuff, and I'm not into blowtorch radio unless you really, you know, irritate me. And I think you're dishonorable. But just the daily blowtorch and the daily talking points of either political party, not my shtick, all right? I like to look at issues from more of a either an NPR, PBS kind of McNeil Lear angle, bring smart people on, ask them hard questions, ask them to footnote, follow up, and have an enlightened, respectful conversation about an issue. And people, I've found people love that. Absolutely love it. That's not, I was an Eddie Style boy. So we go out to dinner, and they said, so do you have any questions? I said, who's going to have creative input into my show? And they both stopped. He said, well, you know, Ed will. I said, look, I'm not Ed's dancing chicken, okay? I fought for this country. I won't do this under those conditions. So just my only condition is I don't ever want to get a phone call from Ed or you. You can call me and tell me that you don't like what I'm doing and then fire me. I got no issue with that because you own it. But don't call me up and tell me that you don't like my content and that I need to have this guy on or I need to talk about this. I won't do that. Needless to say, I did not get the job. I didn't get the job. And I said, and I'm not going to change, you know, my conservative. And I would say if I kind of defined myself, I would have these contests. Is Mac a Democrat or Republican? Because I said that I was an independent. And I would have these things like, no, you're a Democrat because of this. You're a Democrat because of that. So I would say fiscally conservative. You know, I'm on defense. I'm obviously, I wouldn't call myself a hawk, but if you had to put me on a spectrum of dove hawks, I'd be on the hawkish end of that spectrum. But I would say socially, I'm liberal, which I think a lot of people that, so what's the difference between a liberal Democrat and a liberal Republican and a conservative Democrat? Not a whole lot. Not a whole lot, I'd tell you very little. So anyway, I think that's the way I did my shtick, and that's not the way he did it. So anyway, but he passed away yesterday, according to the stories I read, in Washington, D.C., of natural causes, so at the age of 64. He was the quarterback. He started
Moorhead.
Yeah, Moorhead, Moorhead State. Now called Minnesota State University Moorhead, was a quarterback there and a good one, and knew football, and was I'll tell you what I thought he did best was he did football good. He did football really well because he played it at a relatively high level, you can just imagine he was a big guy too. You throw a whiskey bottle, at him, and I believe he was being heckled about shooting his dog too. The other part of the story was he was being heckled about his dog. So anyway, Ed Schultz passed away. God bless him. All right. Anything special of the 4th of July?
I didn't do anything. Just hung out at home. Did a little bit of grilling. Not much. Did some burgers and my obligatory foot-long hot dogs.
No, there you have it. I've got an email for you. Mac, I heard the chef say last week that he doesn't put anything in ground beef before he forms it and puts it on the grill. And I think he used the word soggy. Could he explain that? Yeah. Did you use that word soggy?
Jesus, I don't know. He said I did, I guess I did. I don't know. If you add things like Worcestershire, stuff like that, it can get soggy, but no, you buy a 80-70-30 blend for hot dogs, hamburgers, that's fat 30, being me 70, because the certainly no more than 80-20, because you want the fat to create the juiciness of the burger.
Right.
And if you do too lean a blend, you have a dry hamburger.
Okay, but what is putting those other things have to do with making it soggy, does it?
Well, I don't know. If you
You said it.
I don't know what context I said it in.
Okay.
Here's the story.
All right. That's legit. I can respect that. No, because you know what? I'll tell you, I like it. A little bit of Worcestershire and a little bit of ketchup, some salt and pepper all in there.
Yeah.
I like a little bit of flavor to the meat. I'm going to tell you that.
Well, you know, I just want to taste the meat. I don't want a meatloaf.
Oh, now you're going to, so you're going to tell me what I'm eating is meatloaf?
Well, you know, garlic, onions, mix it up. I just like a straight burger with anything that's going to give it flavor on top of it.
You got after meatloaf on me. I can't believe that.
I can't believe you're so sensitive for a big guy.
You went meatloaf on me, man. Come on. If I want a
That's what I feel if you put a lot of stuff in a hamburger, which people do, God bless them. They put chopped garlic. They can put onions in there, Worcestershire, ketchup. That's usually what I put in a meatloaf blend. That's all I'm saying.
All right.
And I like my burger virgin. Salt and pepper on it, and that's it. And a loosely formed patty, not mushed to where maybe that's where it came. When you mush it together and you mix it, over mix it, and you mush it and you take the grind out of it, it just. You make your patties just so they hold.
All right. But in terms of soggy, to go back to the question, I don't recall when I've cooked a burger, you know, that it was soggy.
I have to hear what I said. Because I don't know.
So you're going to give me that depends. That depends.
All I can say, my bad if I confused you.
That depends on what your definition of is. Is that where you're going with this?
No, I'm not going there at all. I'm just saying.
All right.
I know what the hell I said
I was misquoted. They took it out of context. Okay. All right.
I don't know. I'm sure I meant what I was talking about, but I don't know.
Who knows?
I'd have to listen to that segment again.
All right. Here's another cooking question.
That's a great question.
Now that you're going Bill Clinton on me, question, Mac. One of the things I had that I don't have often, but they were awesome, are deviled eggs. I don't know how many I actually did consume, but I did not stray far from the deviled egg platter over the course of the 4th of July. It's not something, as I said, that I eat often. However, when there was any time when nobody is watching the tray, I grabbed three of them. I'm not sure, again, how many times I did that, but I did it more than three times. I know that. Does the chef have any pointers for making great deviled eggs? Chef?
Well, you take the yolks out after you hard-boiled your eggs. You cut them in half. You take the yolks out. You put them in a bowl. salt, pepper, mayonnaise. You can mince. If you're going to put anything in with the egg yolk, you have to chop it fine. That's called mincing.
Okay.
And you can use onions. I usually don't use garlic. I like onions or green onions. I chives. And then mayonnaise. And then you can put sometimes a little pickle relish in that mixture. Sweet pickle relish. And you can put a little sriracha in there for a little heat. Or if you don't like sriracha, you can put cayenne pepper if you like heat. But I like mine with either minced green onions or shallots or chives and salt and pepper. Not a lot of salt, but then sriracha with my mayonnaise. And then maybe if my wife has any of her homemade pickle relish around, sweet pickle relish, I will take that and put like maybe a teaspoon, just so it gives it a little sweet with the sriracha heat. And then I mix it up real fine, like a paste. And then there's two ways you can do it. You can put it in a pastry bag. With a little cone in the end, and then you squirt a little circle thing if you want to get pretty. But for me, I will take a teaspoon, and I will scoop it, and then I scrape it in the egg, and then I do it on the other side, so it's like mounded in the middle, and I mound it as high as I can. Hold on.
When you say mounded, hold on. When you say mounded, you mean you build a little pile of it?
Yeah, you have a scoop out where the yolk was.
Right.
You fill that up.
Right.
And then you have to build a little mound on top of that. So it's, you don't want the deviled egg to be level. Because there's plenty of white that's been cooked. But you want to have a lot of the yolk filling, and you kind of mound it up a little bit, maybe, anywhere by about half an inch to an inch high. And that's how you roll. And my problem with this process, if I'm making the eggs, is I'm hard to, one for the platter, one for my mouth immediately. If I have been assigned to make the deviled eggs. And I find it very difficult. I start with 2 dozen eggs, cook them, cut them all in half, and maybe I have at least a half a dozen halves, six halves, already consumed before the platter is made. Because I am with that caller, deviled eggs are a downfall for me, and when I haven't made them and I'm at a place that has made them, and that's the first thing I go for, and that will set the tone whether I'm in trouble or not eating the deviled eggs. And I do just what he does. Nobody's looking, I'm into it. And that's just the way it is with deviled eggs. And that's why I don't make them very often. Because I have a hard time sharing it. I'm sorry, folks, but this is Mac's show, and it's truth and honesty all the way.
There you go. Yeah, that's what we come to expect. Okay. No, you know what?
Yep.
I agree. You come around the corner and you see him, you're like, oh, and especially good, right? Especially good ones. You can't eat one of them. You eat it and you're like, oh, well, that was tasty. How about if I move along? No, I'm staying right here. I'm going nowhere.
Well, no, what I do is I'll pop one in my mouth and then I'll take one and I'll walk away from the table.
I'll look at the rest of the buffet. But usually the deviled eggs are first, like an appetizer. So, and then I'll look at the rest of the table, and then I'll walk around and talk to a few people, get a drink, and I'll consume that second one that I had, definitely before I get to the bar. And then I'll swing around after my cocktail, and I'll make another pass at the deviled eggs. And, you know, the art form, though, is to eat them so nobody knows you're eating all of them.
Yeah.
So you can't be accused of eating all the deviled eggs.
Of hoarding, yeah.
It's very difficult.
Yeah, because, you know, they're on a platter, so it's not like a bowl of chips where you can take a bunch out and nobody really knows that you annihilated, you know, the chips, because, you know, there's a lot of them still in there. You start hammering the shrimp platter. Although shrimp, there's a bunch of shrimp on the platter.
But that's
too.
Another weakness.
Shrimp?
Oh, God. Come on. You know, by the time you get eating a dozen shrimp, you're already hungry again. it's some food like that is very hard.
Yeah, you know what? I think those are two of the food groups that are, you know, you can't. What was the advertising? No one can eat just one. Lay's potato chips.
Yeah, that's it.
Yeah. Hold on. Here's another email. Hey, Mac, could you ask the chef about his first experiences with air conditioning? I was sitting here rolling listening to you. Somehow, I mean, it's going to be hot all over the country. It's going to be 102 here near the coast. Like, what is that? You know, what are we, barbarians now? So I was talking about, you know, when growing up as a kid, and you tended not to have air conditioning, right?
That's right.
And so when you ride
it, we didn't have air conditioning in our car till the 60s.
Yep.
And I thought I'd died and gone to heaven. But you get in the car and those little wings for opening and closing, if people are smoking, that's where they flicked out their cigarette. And you're in the back seat, your parents are both smoking, and you're trying to sit there, and we had a Plymouth station wagon, one of our cars, I think it was a 59 Plymouth, with the back seat facing towards the back of the car.
Oh yeah.
And that's where I had to sit. Usually I was doing something wrong, and so I got to get into looking at the cars behind us. And so they'd be smoking, and it'd all come right back.
But that's the way you grew up. I mean, it's not like you noticed it. I mean, not like today when somebody, right, when somebody's smoking now, it's like, oh, are you kidding me? But we grew up in those cars with both of our parents smoking.
Yep.
And in the winter, it's not like they open the wing windows in the winter, bro.
Oh, hell no.
Because a couple things. Your mother had just done her hair, right? Right. She put about four.
She just put her helmet on.
she had about 4 pounds of Aquanet on that thing. She was not. The window was not going down. Right?
Hell no.
And she had to have a cigarette. I mean, come on. She's got a little decompressed on her way to the party. But in the summer, when you went places, you rolled around with the windows down, if you could imagine that. Like driving down the interstate with the windows down, trying to keep the car cool.
So that's what we did. So I mean, if you.
Sweating your ass off.
Yep. I remember that. I can't remember the first air conditioning car, but I know Dad bought station wagons. I think it was a Chevy
Yeah, we got ours in 1965 in Dallas, Texas, when our station wagon gave out. We were a Pontiac family. We were a Pontiac family, so we bought Pontiacs, and we got a car with air conditioning in it. And let me tell you, it's hotter than hell in Dallas.
Bet, and the humidity just equal it.
Right, right. I mean, it's Dallas not as bad as Houston when you get down towards the Gulf Coast, but it was hot and humid there. And we were little kids, but I mean, you dealt with it every summer. And then that was the first air conditioning car we got. It was awesome. And then, we moved into our new house in 1973, I think. We moved. My dad had been in the big leagues for a few years, and my mom got to design our new home. Oh my God. You thought she died and went to heaven.
Yeah.
Yeah. And we moved in. It had central air conditioning. Boom, bitches. Yeah. Central air conditioning. First time I heard my mom say the F word was over central air conditioning. It was actually central heating. The cat, a dog in the neighborhood attacked our cat. Our cat's name was Sam. And a dog attacked it, grabbed it by the neck, and almost killed Sam. Sam did not, he's had post-traumatic stress. He did not want to go outside. So unbeknownst to my mother, when we moved in the summer, he was pissing down the air conditioning, central air conditioning vents. Sam was a shrewd cat. He was like, I'll just piss down these and nobody will know. So... And it wasn't an issue because it was all cool air. However, when she dialed up the central heat, you thought you were the inside of some cat's bladder, okay? It was not a good thing. And she didn't know what it was. She didn't know what was doing it. And I remember that winter, she came around the corner, and I don't know where I was, but she yelled, "You fucker," at the cat. Okay.
Your mother did.
My mom dropped the F-bomb right at the cat. I was like, what? What just happened? Kathleen dropped the F-bomb. Are you kidding me? This is awesome. That means it's okay. I've been sneaking around dropping it. Now I can do it in public, which was the wrong assessment on my part. But it was amusing nonetheless. We had to get a contractor come out, and he had to clean all of our air conditioning ducts. Yeah, Sam. Using him as his urinal. It was not a good thing.
Oh, no.
Yeah.
Oh, God.
Yeah, that's a cat.
Oh.
It was awful. So then we were freezing our ass off because we couldn't turn the heat on. during the winter until she got it fixed. So anyway.
So how long did that cat stay around?
I don't know what she did. I think whether she put him outside. I don't know what she did to halt that behavior. Because I think back in the day. Parents were more pragmatic. That cat would have gone to the pound.
Yeah.
Kathleen was like, that cat's going to jack. No, that ain't happening. Hello. When did the first time you moved? Did you know the story? Guess who invented air conditioning?
Yeah.
No.
Yeah, I heard you earlier.
Yeah, Willis Carrier, right? Carrier air conditioning. Yeah. That dude. And all he did. Yeah. All he did was he reversed the heating process. Hello. Air conditioning. Boom. So, when was the first home that you moved into that had central air? That's a big deal.
I never did.
What?
We always had window units.
Really?
We never had central air. When I moved out of the house,
I think the first apartment building was after high school in California. They had central air. And no, they had window units too. I can't remember the first one. It wasn't when I was living at home, that's for sure.
It was a big deal. Right. And then in the summer, you know, you just slept with the windows open, mosquitoes buzzing around, just dealing with it, you know, just dealing with it.
We always had to change the screen, take the storm windows off in the winter, in the spring, put the screens up, and then my job was washing them. When they came down, and then before we put them up, was the hose off the screens, and help Dad put the screens up, and then that was it. And you had windows open, and this was in Ohio, where I lived, grew up.
Ohio, the great state of Ohio. As Ohio goes, so goes the nation. That's right.
Pretty much.
That's what they say in Ohio, anyway. Yep. Another cooking question. Mac, I have a grilling question. It involves corn on the cob. Does the chef grill his corn on the cob? If so, husk on, husk off. How does he prepare it? The Almery Radiohead chef comes from a part of the country that has corn to die for. Literally, yes. When you get it fresh, that white sweet corn, it requires no butter, no salt, no nothing. It is absolutely delicious. How do you prepare it?
Okay, if I'm on the grill,
yes,
I will leave the husks on, and I will soak the corn in a bucket of water. And so it gets moist, and it creates a steam bath when you put it on a hot grill. And then it steams, and then when you peel it, you know, the husk gets kind of charred. That's when you know it's done. You pull it off and just peel everything off and have at it with butter or salt and pepper, and that just depends. Now, I grew up, my grandmother had a farm in New Jersey, the food cookbook writer. So they had a week, that the farmer that ran the farm for him grew this white corn. And it's back there, they grow this just solid white corn, and it's sugar. It's like eating a tube of sugar. And she would have dinner parties. I saw this. And she would eat 7 ears of corn at dinner, or 5 ears of corn. But she wouldn't. She'd serve everybody else their courses. And she'd have a corn, a couple of ears of corn or an ear of corn for each course. And that's. But here they do peaches and cream, and that's a white and gold corn that is to die for also. But if you're going to cook it on the grill, otherwise you shuck it and boil it in water. Or if you put it on the grill, you have to be very attentive.
Yes.
Cooking the corn.
So do you just leave it there?
Oh, you turn it. You have to stand over it and turn it. Because otherwise it'll just get black. That's why I like to leave the husk on if I'm going to cook it on the grill.
Okay.
Or peel it and drop it in boiling salt water. And, then I have a stick of butter, not a full quarter pound, but maybe a quarter of that. And then I'll roll the salt and pepper the corn, and then I'll roll it in that butter and you leave a little bit of that stock on so you have a handle. Now they have these little mini forks you can push in each end so you can kind of spin it.
Yes.
And then you don't miss any of the corn. You get all of it. And there's the two techniques of eating it row at a time and then turning it, or going around in circle and eating it like that.
What do you go for? I go for kind of the typewriter approach.
That's exactly how I do.
Yeah. I don't spin. And then I rotate.
There's a friend of mine that eats it. He goes around in a circle. And somehow we had a little contest of who could eat the whole ear of corn fastest.
Yes.
And he crushed me.
Crushed you?
Yes, me.
That's troublesome. Troublesome. Let me ask you, here's another one. Mac, the best corn on the cob I've ever had, the chef, and then in parentheses, the chef made me think of it with his instruction to boil it in salt water. The corn was done on a grill, but it was done in hot water on the grill with salt in the water. He then, next to it, melted, I don't know how many sticks of butter. He dipped the corn, the salted corn, in butter, put two little of those small prongs in each end, and that's what you ate. You added nothing to it. It was absolutely, positively out of this world. The best I've ever seen. It was no hassle. The only thing you did with that stuff was eat it, and it was fantastic. I have a question for him, though. Today is National Fried Chicken Day. Not sure if he knows that, or you know that, Mac.
I did not.
Does the chef have a personal recipe for fried chicken?
Yes. I like to take my fried chicken.
Can I tell you something, though? I love Kentucky Fried Chicken. I know that's not a popular thing to announce, but let me just tell you, I love Kentucky Fried Chicken with mashed potatoes and gravy and coleslaw. Come on, man. That is awesome. Absolutely, positively awesome. And if you don't, Mac, and the skin on Kentucky Fried Chicken, come on. The 11 herbs and spices. Yeah, nice. I love that stuff. Okay, that I know somebody's gonna write it. It's official. You're white trash. All right,
Not at all. Come on, man. This country grew up on Kentucky. Right?
Yeah. What's wrong with being
Unless
white? What's wrong with being
South.
White trash? Yeah. Yeah.
No. That's well. Anyway. Right. Yeah. I like to do. Is I'll take my fried chicken and I'll soak it overnight in buttermilk. And then you heat your oil up in a cast iron skillet. And then you shake your, kind of pat dry your chicken when you pull it out of buttermilk. Then roll it in seasoned flour. And you can put your 11 herbs and spice in that seasoned flour. And then I drop it in the oil because a crust will form on the skin and on the stuff that doesn't have skin on it. And that's the crust I like. Now, most people will eat fried chicken like Kentucky KFC makes. And that is you take your chicken. You rinse it, you pat it dry, you drop it in a flour mix, seasoned flour, then you put it in an egg and milk mixture to get it wet, and then you drop it in breadcrumbs or crushed up corn flakes, panko breadcrumbs, you're just straight breadcrumbs, or corn flakes that are crushed up. And, flour, egg, milk mixture, and then your crumbs, whatever they are. and then you drop it in the oil. That's the usually the general way. But I just like the heavily seasoned flour and then drop it into the oil. Hot oil at 375. You don't want to have your oil any hotter than that. That's when the chicken crisps up and the best. And any lower, the skin will get soggy. And any higher, the oil will start to smoke, and then you'll burn everything.
Hmm.
Maybe start a fire.
We don't want that. What are the seasonings that you put into the flour for yours?
Cayenne, black pepper, salt, garlic powder, onion powder. And that's what I put in.
And season to taste. Wow. All right.
Yeah. But, you know, you might like whatever, you know, tarragon.
All right.
Is a good herb to put in the flour mix. Tarragon and chicken go really, really well. So.
But again, your encouragement is always experiment with different herbs and spices till you too come up with your own 11 ingredients, and you make awesome fried chicken. Most of us grew up with fried chicken. I did not. Kathleen baked her chicken, so I never. But I love fried chicken. Skin off fried chicken. Come on, man.
My wife doesn't eat that with the skin on.
That's fine.
And so we don't have that around here.
But
when I can get fried chicken with the skin on, that is my wheelhouse. I love fried chicken skin. It's what makes the fried chicken taste the best.
Yeah, I mean, other than that, who cares about the chicken, man? You're just eating the skin, and the chicken goes with the skin. That's why this whole, you know, shift to boneless, skinless chicken fillets. What? What is that?
That's for the people who don't like fat.
Yeah.
Now, I think that's a communist plot myself. But
it is a communist plot.
Or that of people who don't like fat. And, you know, like I like to eat the fat on my prime rib too. Some of it, not the gristle part, but that crispy outer skin when you grill a piece of steak.
Oh, come on, man. It's the best. It's what makes, okay, so we like meat that, is, you know, has marbling in it, right? That's what we, you know, when we talk about it, that's, you know, the favorite cuts of beef are. Why is prime rib such a favorite cut?
It's got marbling in it, and that is fat, folks. And that fat is what makes the meat tender. That's why you see these barbecue joints today that sell brisket. The reason that it is cooked for 10 to 14 hours is because it's loaded with fat, and it's a tough piece of meat otherwise, and if you try and eat it too soon, you might as well just nail it to the bottom of your shoe and use it for shoe leather.
Ooh.
But the fat trickles through the meat and tenderizes it. That's why when you go to a place and you say, oh, give me the brisket, and it's been cooked for 10 to 14 hours, depending on the size and the temperature of the method of cooking. Usually when you cook pieces of meat like that, it's low temperature and a long period of time, low and slow.
All right, my friend. First of all, thank you for all the information today from air conditioning to fried chicken to your memories of Ed Schultz. God bless him. And his family. So, thank you very much.
One last word.
Sure.
Corn. When you can get fresh corn at this time of year, eat it. And don't eat just one ear. Eat multiple ears.
And that butter, cooking it on water on the grill with a pan of butter next door, you could do that inside too. And then dunking it in the butter.
Hello.
And that takes about 2 pounds of butter, folks.
There you go.
2 pounds of melted butter.
I've never seen anybody do that before. I've never seen anybody get after butter like that. But it would certainly save a lot of the hassle. You could get straight to eating it. It would lend itself to like a corn fest, right?
Oh yeah. And
straight up corn fest, man.
A corn fest mess.
Yeah, we're eating. We are eating some corn here today, folks. We are eating some corn. All right. All right, sir. You have a great week, and I will talk to you.
Okay. Take care, buddy.
There you have it. The All Marine.
All the best to you and your family.
You bet. The All Marine Radio head chef, the one and only P. Kimball Holmes. All right, we're going to take a break. We come back to Gunner. Stand by to join us if you're interested in the World Cup. Spoiler alert. France just defeated Uruguay 2-0. Uruguay's goaltender let in a soft goal. But they still lose 1-0 even without that goal. Maybe it demoralized the little puppies because they didn't look like they stepped it up a whole lot. So I think if you're an Uruguayan or whatever you call yourselves, I think, I don't know, I did not see a desperate attempt at the end of that contest, and I'm a little bit bothered by it. I'm not going to lie to you about that. All right, so the Gunner going to join us next, Michael Musselman.
America's injured and critically ill service members face incredible challenges every day of their lives. Since 2004, the Semper Fi Fund has helped thousands of service members and their families with both immediate and long-term needs. Join the Semper Fi Fund in supporting American heroes. They've given so much. Now it's our turn. Learn how your tax-deductible donation makes a real difference in their lives at SemperFiFund.org.